You are now listening to the Someone's Favorite Productions podcast network.
Hey, this is Jason Kleberg from the Force 5 podcast, a show that forces a guest to come up with a movie-themed top 5 list topic, and then we reveal our picks on air. Top 5 heist films, top 5 tearjerkers, top 5 movie dogs. Every show you'll be asking yourself, what would be on my list? Guests include directors, screenwriters, actors, podcasters, musicians, authors, and even a professional wrestler. Subscribe to the Force 5 podcast, and you won't just be a listener, you'll be a list nerd. The Force 5 podcast, available wherever you're listening now.
Hey everybody, welcome to the New World Pictures podcast bonus episode. I'm Ryan, with me as always is Erica.
Hey Ryan, bonus!
And Mark is on assignment for this intro, but he was here for our interview. This is an interview that's going to end our Ha-Ha-Gist 2 double take, as we talk to Fritz Kirsch, the director of Under the Boardwalk. Fritz actually directed 3 movies for the New World. He directed Children of the Corn and Tough Turf and Under the Boardwalk. Under the Boardwalk was the 3rd movie and final one of a 3-movie deal that he had with New World. And we're going to talk about just Under the Boardwalk, as well as another movie he made that really should have been New World. I got to admit, I was really trying hard to see if Fritz could help me, like, make it so that we could have Winners Take All as like a nearly New World. I don't know if I'm going to be able to thread that needle, but boy, I was really hoping, because it's another really great film. But we're going to talk about that movie.
When we talked to him, he wasn't feeling well, so maybe that's why he wasn't able to help you completely.
I'll get back to him. I gotta say, we had a great time talking with him, and a really nice lengthy conversation, and he was just so generous with his time despite not feeling well, and you cannot tell, because
he's a pro.
He's amazing. Fritz is amazing. I would have been the worst, but instead, Fritz was the best.
Well, luckily, Ryan, it's not about you. It's about Fritz. That's right. Please enjoy our interview with Fritz Kirsch.
Before we get to Under the Boardwalk, because I am so excited to talk with you about that one, Winners Take All is a movie that I feel like that should have been New World. I don't know how that movie didn't go to New World. It's crazy to me.
I don't know when I made that one in the order of things. It certainly was after Tough Turf. It may have been right after Tough Turf, after a gap when we couldn't find something to do at New World. The guy who was the producer, ultimate producer, started a company. His name is Jerry Henshaw, and he had been part of Fox and or United Artists and Heaven's Gate, and do very well with Who Got Blamed on Heaven's Gate, but somehow decided to get out of that type of film product and get back to the drive-in teen genre product. And so he started this company, and this was his first venture. So he had raised the funds. He had a bank account, so to speak. And this was a film that was brought to him, a project brought to him by a sports filmmaker, a producer who made ski movies, and then another man whose business, two other men who I really didn't know what their business was. And they just, here, you want to make this film? Let's go do it. And I had some development deals at the same time. And that one came true. And okay, we'll go make this one. And that one, Elliot Davis, the camera operator on Tough Turf, became my cinematographer. It was his first film as a cinematographer. And he and I started again to make a film about the shrinking West, just like cowboys were losing their landscape, their plains, the reality of their world by the city's growth. So we wanted to do the same thing for the motorcycle rider. We wanted to make the houses start to take away the freedoms and so forth. And in the second week, he got fired because we were too artistic. he got the walk. And I got the walk about 2 weeks later when they said, okay, now we're going to have our stunt coordinator do the last sequence. You've done well. Thanks. We'll show you the movie when we're done.
Wow. Okay.
Because, I didn't get along really well with Jerry Henshaw because he was extremely budget conscious. He wanted to make a budget. He didn't want to make a film. And Elliot and I had this great idea of what this movie could be to make it different than the conventional teen, action film.
Did you bring Courtney Gaines back, or was that just sort of okay? Because it really is a fun role for him, and such a nice range to have worked with you on Children of the Corn, and then this one where he's just such a goofy buddy of Don Michael Paul. So it's a great like range he gets just in these couple movies.
He's great. I see him every couple of months. We go to these conventions. He goes to a lot of them. I go to a few, and we'll talk and so forth. And he's still acting, and he's great. And so, yeah, I would do, and I hope he does this other role with me on this other film. He's still working, and he's much more. He's got this great band in South Carolina.
Yeah, we've actually been able to speak with Courtney. It was very cool. He was a very nice guy. And he worked with a few movies, but starting, I think, with this, with Winners Take All, with Gerardo Mejia, who of course will go on to he,
Gerardo.
yeah, where
Yeah,
he
Rico
helped
Suave, baby.
Rico
Oh,
Suave.
man.
Yeah,
Great.
they do like Colors and Can't Buy Me Love as well afterwards, so they became good friends off of
They
this
did.
movie.
And I think, Gerardo, we did two films together, I believe. Also, I Gerardo was terrific, and then he just took off in the music business. And I remember he told me one day, the money he had made from our film, he bought like a, I don't know, a hot little sports car, and he wrecked it, and he was really sad. And then he got, the next film, and so he was back on top or something. But he was very good.
Was there any thought that you had at that time? I know it was early in your career, but was there any thought that because you had done a horror film, you'd done the sort of West Side Story, Romeo and Juliet sort of drama, and now you were sort of making this movie about motocross riders and sort of extreme sports. Was there a thought of just making sure that you handle a lot of different genres? Was that something that you were thinking about, or was it really just sort of project to project?
I always wanted to make one film with all genres together, and I joke and call it Chainsaw Lawman, but nobody would pick it up. It's like every genre in one movie. But I was just at that time, I didn't think long term and legacy and things. I was just a hired gun. My philosophies were really kind of embedded in the TV commercial world of this week we'll do soap, and then at the end of the week we're going to get ready to do tuna. And then we'll do Procter and Gamble, and then we'll do General Motors. So everything was a job, but I was having so much fun. I really didn't think forward enough. But I did get into a category of, oh, you do all those children's or those teen movies. You know about kids and have to deal with the labor laws, and so you have a leg up on that. So don't try to do anything with adults. Let's keep doing this. So that was it.
Interesting. When it comes, you have that producer for Winners Take All. When it came to distribution, you didn't go back to New World and say, "Hey, what about this one? You guys want to release it?" Or
No, he claimed he had a deal with United Artists from the very beginning, in some
oh.
way, if it still existed. And so he was on his own. I had nothing to do with the distribution and the marketing or anything on that film. Just, thanks. We got everything. I'll go back and be a little bit more clear on why. It wasn't because I was unethical or I did a bad job. I did a fine job for them and everyone was happy. However, it started out on a bad foot. I mentioned I had development deals. Well, I was going to do a film. I got into a development to do a film called Night Flyers, which was a cool short story.
Yeah, but Stephen King, right?
No, Martin.
Oh, okay.
R.R. Martin, is that his name?
George R. R. Martin?
George R. Martin, yeah. Night
Yeah.
Flyers, kind of a space thing. And we rewrote the script. But I also was working with the writer on the motorcycle film and rewriting that to make it more of this Western kind of idea and the kids and that stuff. And so one day, like 10 o'clock, the agent called and said, okay, they're going to start Night Flyers. You're making a movie again. Fantastic. Then about 3 o'clock that day, hey, guess what happened? He got another movie to make. And guess what happened? They're on the same day. I said, wait a minute. How does this work? You guys, what did you get me into? Your development deals both came true on the same day and they start at the same time. So you've got to pick one. I said, What do you mean? I have to pick one. So I talked with the producers, and both companies said, you promised me, I paid you. If you don't do mine, I will sue you. Whoa.
Wow.
So the agents and lawyers got together and came up with a solution, which was Motorcycle would indemnify me. They would pay the legal costs if I did their film. And so the Night Flyer guys sued and they covered the legal. So I went off to do that. So they had an attitude kind of as, all you have to do is bring us dailies. That's all we ask for. You know, that is part of us paying your thing. We'll take it. We know how to make movies. So, okay. I kind of was twisted.
Yeah. I think it's a really fun film, just for the record. I enjoy it very much. It's a very good film. But I really want to talk to Under the Boardwalk, and I know you're not feeling great, so I want to make sure we have time for it and don't keep you too long.
What am I going to do? Go to sleep? Do that all day. Sit down here at the world headquarters. I mean, come on now.
Well, thank you. That's very kind. We really do appreciate that. But Under the Boardwalk, another one. I got the VHS here. This is another great film that you made. And was this you going back to New World and finally finding the movie to have your three picture contract, or?
It was more than that. It was a great surprise. It was, you know, on this three picture deal, I was taking products into them, ideas, scripts, things that I enjoyed. Let's make this, let's make that. And for a variety of reasons that I really at that time didn't understand, marketing and the big picture and the global universe of selling product, how it really works and what it's all about, who the demographic of the ticket buyer is and specifics like that, which make the green light happen. I had pitched something to them, and I'm just going to say on Tuesday or something. On Thursday, they called to tell me what they thought. And they said, but here, we have a problem. We have a film that just started production like 1 week. And we'd like you to see the dailies because we're losing confidence in the leadership of the film to deliver a film. When you see the dailies, perhaps you could give us your point of view. Are they constructing scenes? How will this go together? So we looked at it and I thought, these are not continuous. I don't see continuity here. I don't see how this would stick together. There doesn't seem to be anything that is making sense. And I don't see this or that. And they said, well, here's our hope. Because we trust you, we'll make a new deal. How about if you take this film over, then we'll make a new three picture deal with you, two of which will be films that you want to make and one that we want to make. And so I said, wait a minute. So it's a put, like, I want to make it. I can make it. I don't have to like bargain, you know, I don't have to think about the global economy, you know, or Trump or anybody, you know, I get to make it. Oh, this is cool. And it was easy. So, okay. So the film went down for about 2 weeks, changed a couple actors, met everybody, looked at locations, and jumped in and, okay, let's finish this film on time the best we can. So I was a hired hand to really come in and just hammer through things, but also add to it and bring something that maybe could make it better. And got to work with the great Robert King, and he was a terrific writer who would come every day with my ideas. At the end of the day, he would come written pages of the ideas we talked about in the morning and this or that. And I wanted to make a film about class distinction and about, you know, the commercialization of something really cool like athletics and how it's just turning people. And so he kind of changed things because he had written a story from an idea by a New World guy. I think Matthew Ermus was a New World guy. About the culture on the beach. And that's what it was all about. Again, Romeo and Juliet, basic, you know, right, conflict between different factions of society or different cultural interests. And
the Lokes and the Vals.
Yeah, the Lokes. So it became really a fun thing to do. And every day we had a good time, and the actors were all really good and into it, and, you know, got to surf and do things that they did. And gosh, I enjoyed myself. And in fact, the producer, Greg Blackwell's, contacted me in the last couple of months, and he lives now in South Carolina, where there's a huge surfing community, Cape Fear.
Oh, really?
And everything. And he's building, I got on and did a chat with a University of North Carolina class in humanities about the culture of surfing. about 4 weeks ago. I mean, he's bringing it back and he's doing things. So it made me see the film, in fact, about 4 weeks ago.
So you've seen it recently?
Yeah, I was really surprised. It's fun.
Yeah, was one of the actors that you replaced, was that did you add in Keith Coogan?
I think he was already cast.
Okay.
The lead, we changed the lead, and we brought in Tracy Walters. We brought
Okay.
in the judge who was in every New World movie ever made, Joe Dante's favorite actor. I still
Yeah.
have his thank you note. This guy was the good luck for every Roger Corman movie ever made.
Yeah, Dick Miller.
Yeah, Dick
Yeah.
Miller. I think it one of the comedians or some one of the funny people we brought in, maybe it was Keith Coogan, but there was a comedian that was hired, and we changed him out with the cast member that's in the film. I really only had two changes.
Okay.
That was it. They didn't think that the lead was strong enough, and I think the female lead too. I think we cast in Zelvan Zernick. That was it. What do you think?
I asked because this has got one of those infamous posters where Keith Coogan's head just sort of looks like they just kind of put it on there at the last second, and
Yeah. Same
it's.
with Tough Turf when they pasted Bobby on there. Ridiculous. Not even his head, not even his face. Yeah.
Want to
Who is
throw
that?
into
No, it's a, that's him, I believe. There's another shot where he's, I think it's the poster.
that one? Yeah, you're talking
Actually.
about this one.
Yeah. Who is that? That's one of the extras.
Yeah, the way that they just kind of put, yeah, his, and who's this over here? You know? I'm not sure what that, I'm not even, who
He
is
was just an extra. He was one of the
just
gang.
somebody there, yeah. But
Yeah.
yeah, it had one of those. So I wondered if Steve Coogan, because his face is just so, it has the picture of everybody in the cast, but then his face is just not
It's
even proportional to everyone else. I
a
thought, oh, was he just a late addition to the cast? And I mean, he's a big part of the movie, but I,
huge. He's the narrator. It's his story.
yeah.
It's really too bad. And they downplayed it with this. I wish Photoshop existed back then. They could have done a better job on all
No doubt.
that.
No doubt. Your cinematographer, Don Burgess, how was
Yeah.
he already working on it, or did you
I
bring him
think
in?
Don was. Yeah, I didn't know him. I got to know him on that film. He's, again, major contributor to cinema history. Don's done some fantastic stuff with Zemeckis and a lot of major films since then. But he was a LA local guy out of the Palisades. He was captain of the football team. We got along really well, and he was a great leader of the crew and the labor sides of things. And he was very efficient, but he was also very artistic, and he was good. And his camera assistant, his camera operator, Chuck Schnur, I think, Chip, took over the last week or so because Don went on to do, I don't know, Back to the Future Part 7 or something ridiculous.
Wow.
How can you say no?
Right, of course.
Oh yeah, stay with me. We're making a surf movie. Oh, what do you have? Gone with the Wind? Oh, that'll never work. Yeah, don't do that.
So, speaking of, you were talking about the surf culture. How much did you know about it at that point in time? Did you know much about it, or were you just sort of jumping in?
No, I was a landlocked surfer. I grew up in upstate New York and skateboarded and thought that was the coolest thing in the world when kids wore baseball hats backward and, ran around in little gremlins. And I had a lot of understanding of the language. But I had lived on the Venice Beach for about 4 years or so by that time. And so I was pretty much around all of it every day. And I was very interested, and I have always been interested in language. So when Robert had new language, new terms, new lexicon, I glommed onto that, and we just kept playing with things and allowing people to come up with different names to call it and trying to make it more than colloquial, but make it culturally wide. Let's come up with a new name for something.
Yeah.
And that was fun. But yeah, I completely understood surfing. And I even was able to get out with the guys and try it once. It's the hardest damn thing to do. I don't know where people get their arms. It's so hard.
Yeah, it helps to have a longer board.
Yeah.
That'll help you because the wave almost picks that up.
Yeah, a long board and not buggy whips for arms, because those guys, man, when they paddle, they whoosh, they go fast.
Yeah. It's great that you were working with Robert King. So he was, you're saying he was on set and he was able to like continue to do rewrites as you did the film.
It was just terrific. I'd never been in that situation where, after shooting, you look at dailies and you talk and you debrief and you plan for the next day and so forth. And there he was, and we talk about the script. What we discovered today, we changed a little bit, or you know what, how's this going? And he would say, okay, I'll have it for you tomorrow. And then he would show up the next day at the end of the day, and he'd have the pages ready for the next day. So he did that, I don't know how many times. A lot. He was just really good, and he wanted to make sure it worked. And when he saw the film in the end, I think he was happy with most of it. I do recall him saying to me once, "Look at the ocean. There's no shit in the ocean. Where are the refrigerators and the cars that are supposed to be floating out there?" And I thought, "Out of your head. Refrigerators don't float." I can understand, pollution, but we tried, man. You got to get stuff that floats. Well, couldn't you just build a car? No. Okay, Robert.
He would go on to write The Good Wife and a bunch of other shows with his wife, and
Huge.
had a huge TV career. It sounds like
Yeah.
that he probably has to do all that to this day to do all those
Yeah.
rewrites and stuff. It's very
Yeah.
much in the TV
He
world.
was very involved, and he watched, and we got along well. I enjoyed his support and collegiality and contributions and collaborations, really. It wasn't a contribution. We collaborated. Yeah.
Yeah, that's great.
Partnership.
I don't want to spoil anything for the film if people haven't seen it, and I highly suggest people see it. But how did you keep that beard on Keith Coogan while he was out there on the surfboard? I mean, that had to be very tricky.
I don't know how they did that. I just put more goo on them, it's like working with children. When one of them goes down, fine, get another kid, just bring them in, kids, they're just children, I shouldn't say that. That gets me in trouble. That was a challenge. There's a lot of little things like that that are technical, what you don't that you do not think of when planning, and you learn. Your critical thinking skills go straight up when you start making films. You think in great detail about all kinds of things like that. But I didn't know. Good makeup people.
And
Yeah.
the surfing, did you shoot, how much surfing did you have to shoot for that? Was a lot of that second unit, or did you shoot a lot of the surfing as well?
We did both. I would say 90% was the second unit. Working on water, working on sand, snow, desert, these are really inefficient environments in which to work in terms of making film. Everything slows down. So the normal process of shooting a scene or just setting a shot may take, let's say, 25 minutes. But when you can't walk quickly, you can't get things back, and you're burdened by heat or cold, now it's 45 minutes. So working with a second unit is more efficient when it comes to water work, on top of or in the water, surfing and being that. And so a specialist was hired who was really good at being in the water and having the boards come to him and going under the waves and riding along with them and doing those things. I don't believe any of it is stock footage. I think it's all originated through the second unit or the first unit when we had our guys out there. No.
You work on a different editor with this one too, because we spoke with Daniel Gross, and what was it like working with him? He was like a long time trailer editor in the trenches there at New World.
He was great. He was great. I think he was on from the beginning, and he and I just laughed and laughed and laughed all the time. We had such a fun time. I've seen him over the years a couple of times at his company in Culver City. I know he called me once because an actress that is an Oklahoman was here in Oklahoma City, and he needed for the trailer some kind of close-up of her. So I got my students to go out and shoot her on the campus, and we sent it to him, and he was like most thankful. So he's just a great guy. He's
Yeah,
just
he's.
funny as heck.
Yeah, we
Yeah.
had a great time talking with him. He's a really, really cool guy.
Yeah. And he
Yeah.
really dug the kids. I mean, he made a lot of those scenes come alive a little bit to the music that we had, the surf punks or whoever they were.
Another great soundtrack. I was going to say
Yeah.
too, I have the record in the other room. It's another great soundtrack. How much input did you have on the music?
We chose them all. Dan and I went through them, and we chose them all. The record companies were sending all kinds of people to us all kinds of sample tapes at the time, because the punk movement and the new wave movement was really coming up. And so we got advanced recordings of Agent Orange and Black Flag and people that were kind of like, I saw them in the clubs and now they're recording. And they were too edgy. Here's one thing. Again, this goes to my sharp intelligence about the future, aka Clooney. So the man who plays the suave, kind of smarthy sales clothing guy, ex-surfer, he said to me when we got toward post, my son's in a band. And I had heard this, a lot of times from people like, oh yeah, great. Your son's in a band. Okay, I don't care. Well, no, they're up and coming and the kids all really like them. Would you like to hear their music? I don't know. Well, he's here it is if you want to do it. And I, yeah, fine, I'll put it down. And so somebody said to me later, did you listen to that music? Eric's his son, and he kind of wanted to know. And I said, no, I don't know. It's a drug thing. They're called Jane's Addiction. They're just drug kids. I don't want them, Later I found out who they were. Oh, yeah. Another smart move.
Yeah. Whoops. Oh, well.
Whoops. Yeah, he's very proud of his son, and his son has done very well. He's a nice man. But at the time, I just thought that's the wrong. We need energy. We need, that reckless. And we're making fun again of legacy and cultures, with Sonny Bono and the surfers and the Surfers for Christ and all these different elements that are on the beach. And we just didn't have that. We wanted real strong punk, real metal-y guys.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Was Wallace Langham already cast or did you cast him?
And he was, Wally was already in it.
Okay. Yeah. He's great. And another, that's a find right there too.
He really was. He's a terrific actor.
This was actually shot, it comes out in 89, but you guys shot it in 87, 88, because it initially is supposed to come out in the summer of 1988.
Yeah.
And then New World started to do previews of it. My same friend I was telling you about, my old roommate, he saw a preview of it around that time. So he saw a sneak preview of Under the Boardwalk, and he, it's another one of your films he speaks very highly of.
Are you sure not we're related? It's like my brother.
I'm pretty sure. But
it's really John Sullivan, that's your roommate, mm-hmm. right?
That's right. were you aware of what was happening with the movie and why it sort of got pushed off, or were you already moving on to another movie? Or
no, I didn't know anything about the marketing of it. Again, this was a film that New World said, do us a favor in so many ways. And I was eager to do the next thing. I wanted to cash in this opportunity or these multiple opportunities. So I started jumping toward, how about this one would be the next one and the next one. And New World also was looking financially up and down. They had secured a huge amount of debt and a huge amount of bankroll, and they were looking to do something or other. So I don't know how it fit in their distribution plans, but they were very honorable. I mean, they came forward when it was time and said, we're not going to make the movie, so let's come to a settlement, these kind of things, because we're not going to make movies. But I don't know why it was held up or for how long. I just know that it was a product that worked for them. But, distribution's a funny thing. It can work one year and it can not work the next year. And talking with sales agents now, as I do a lot, it's just bizarre how a film with so-and-so in it at the Berlin Film Festival, the European film market last month, will be snapped up. And then that same actor is in another film that opens in Cannes and nobody wants it. It's in May, just months apart. Don't know how it works.
Yeah. So did you get close to making any of the movies that they promised you that, hey, you can make whatever you want? Was it just purely financial with them that it didn't get off the ground, or did any of those ideas ever get close to going into production?
I got close. Yeah, we were going to go into something and which film was it? I can't remember which one it was. But they were, Fritz, we'll do this film, that kind of stuff, on the phone calls with the agents and whatnot. And then within a week or two, it was, okay, come on in. We've got this issue. And I remember Raimi coming out of the board meeting saying, okay, look, here's what we got to do. We're making changes and so forth. So I know we made a promise. We owe you how much? Let's just make a deal. Let me just pay you because we're not going to make certain films now. We can't. So we didn't, even though they were eager and the development people were all great. Gail Katz, who is the development head of development at that time, she was right on top of everything and in charge and sergeanting things forward. And then bingo, the reality is New World wanted to sell their library, kind of get out of the business, move on.
Did you make so you didn't make any of the movies that you had brought to them, but you didn't go make them anywhere else?
No.
Okay.
No. 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 I'm
Okay.
trying to think through
Sure.
the films. No. I didn't go to other studios. Studios still talk to me about making products for them, but nobody wanted to make the ones I wanted to make, which, at a certain point in the category of films that I was making and the type of film director that I was at that time, as a gun for hire, this was a living. So you go do it. It's like a TV director. And I started looking at the growing cable business and those films, thinking this would be a cool place to play because you get that freedom again. Just make. And I remember being offered a film that got made by the people who were big game show producers. They had a deal with CBS to make a film about a melting atomic plant in Japan. It was very cool. And they did make it with some large TV stars. And it was mine to make until I opened my mouth when they said, okay, so here's what you do. Because in television, you make the script, you don't just come up with new ideas. But I wasn't the kind of guy at that time. I was kind of an ass. And I said, okay, here's the deal. Let's make it because it's about a melting atomic energy plant and the dangers and the perils, and there's Japan's involved. Let's do it like an old Toho La Brea film where everything's out of sync. Okay. They talk. These guys across the table just went, are you fucking kidding me? You want to come? Yeah, we'll have the guys talk and then they'll go out of sync, just like in, Godzilla. Okay, thanks. Goodbye. There's like $250,000 out the window. Like, there goes that job. My agent at the time was not happy with me. An idiot. So,
But it did like set you up for other jobs, right? You're saying like that time at New World, it did had like it got you were a name that people were trying to get for a lot of jobs, right?
yeah, no, I wouldn't say a lot, but yeah, I was working and things were cool. And I was kind of picking and choosing a little bit of this based on schedule. But I'd also wanted to get into all the varieties of exhibition like cable. And I've always liked docs. And so I kind of looked toward that. And, it was what was coming up and what was there and who was doing it. And then again, if you're not making a lot of money at the box office, your draw is less. It's
Right.
just like the actor, the director suffers the same thing. You get a few chances to make a good box office, and if you don't produce box office money, then someone else might be better. And also, you get older, and the 20-year-old is cheaper than the 40-year-old. And now that I'm DGA and now it's you have to pay me and it's bigger, oh, isn't there a 20-year-old? But that's it. I didn't, it was fine. It was
Yeah,
fine.
and to that end, Under the Boardwalk gets released basically. It's the last movie that New World releases theatrically. They
Was
release it basically on top of Heathers as they are putting Heathers out, and they basically pair them together. They play them in double features, and this is like they got the last ones that are theatrical, and the ones that they didn't weren't quite ready, those get put out by other people.
Yeah, they sold a lot of their library off, or they licensed it out to Lakeshore and other things. As I've Terry Kirby and I tracked down our participations from Children of the Corn, we saw the hierarchy. Well, it's not a hierarchy, but let's just call it the ownership list. It was extensive. Now it's with Disney. That's who owns it now, of all people.
Yeah, some of the theatrical films ended up there because of they get bought by Fox, and then Fox subsequently gets sold or gets bought by Disney. So it's sort of, yeah, it's interesting. But did you ever go to New World to work on maybe some of the TV stuff they were maybe making at that point, or?
No, John Feldheimer, who I saw frequently in the hallways. I mean, like I said, Monday morning you'd go and you'd pitch an idea to Robert, to Bob Ramey, and he would, pick and choose. Everybody would be in the meeting. It was kind of cool, and you'd see everybody in the hallways. I mean, lots of the guys that you've spoken with were there, the editing and the post area, and Tony Randall was running around pulling his hair, trying to, coordinate and balance and juggle. And TV to me was not something I had any interest in. I kind of looked at it, nah, that's, the little I did. And I did do some TV and a bunch of series, and I found it to be just you walked into the locations that the company was using, and there were tape marks on the floor from the previous week's work. And they knew where to stand and where the camera goes. And there was no kind of adding creativity to it at that point. You were assembly line work. You got so many hours to edit, and then the next guy took over, and then the next guy took from there, and you just moved through it. It's a fine way to make a living, and it's a fine business, and it's a lot better than it is now. I mean, talking with Peter Horton and his experiences and pulling his hair out on New Amsterdam and stuff, it gets huge when you get to the right ones. But back then, it was really something that didn't attract me that much. But I did a few just to see what it was like.
It's interesting that you're talking about Peter Horton because you worked with several actors that then become directors. Do you now like? I mean, it's got to be interesting to check in with them and talk with them now because now they have it from another perspective. Like Don Michael Paul, who you work with on Winners Take All, he becomes a director, and Peter Horton became a director. Like, is it a totally different way of communicating with them now, or like a different conversation?
Yeah, it is. I mean, when you're specializing in one area of work and you're thinking about what your contribution will be, that's what you're kind of focusing on, and you're thinking about this and that, and you don't think about other things. So, as a director, you're kind of thinking globally, and the actor's thinking a little bit more myopically. Just, okay, this is what I'm doing, this is what I want, and so forth. And I mean, Don Michael Paul's a good example. His son's at Oklahoma University. I just started last fall. So he called me up and said, "Hey, I'm coming up from Austin. My son's enrolling, and you want to hang out. I want to see the film department. My son's going to be in the film department." I said, "Oh, I'll introduce him to everybody. Come on, you'll meet the chair. I work with these guys all the time." So we hung out and we talked about film in a completely different way. I think your theory is absolutely correct. We talked about it as film lovers, people who understood the whole picture of how it works and what voice is and the contributions and the layers and how the filmic tools really do contribute to an outcome, an overall complete symphony, as opposed to just, I'm here to say my lines and get what I want. I have to get out of the room as the actor, or the director just wants the actor to be on that mark and that's it. So yeah, it's a much more robust conversation, and it's much more mature than.
They have to have a different appreciation too from having worked with you because now they know what it's like on the other side.
Oh yeah, and Don is such a guy that he keeps telling me, "I remember when you said this to me, you shit, and you scared me to that. I did I do that? I don't remember that." "Don't you do that, Don?" He goes, "Well, now I do this, and his is worse than what I ever did, What I do to actors now, I just, you stand here, look there, say five. Okay, next guy, the pressures of it.
And I have to say, you said you recast the two leads. The two leads, I think, are really good, really strong in this movie.
He was very good. Yeah. And so is Hunter von Leer, who plays the surf shop owner, who's kind of the senior guru who does it. He's become a lifelong friend. We've done three films together or so. And I asked him if he'd do another, and he's kind of retired in Indiana. And he said, "Oh, Frenzy, for you, I'll do it. Yeah, give me up. Hold me up. Stand me up. I'll do
He's been in like a thousand things
it."
too. Like I
Oh,
saw him in so much growing up. Like he just
he's
he
terrific.
yeah.
Yeah. He's terrific. He owned the apartment that the lead lived in.
Oh, okay, that was his apartment. Okay.
Yeah. Hunter had about four apartment buildings in Santa Monica, and he had all these actors living there. And so
That's
you
amazing.
want to cast anybody, you'd call Hunter. Okay, who's not working?
So you just were talking a little bit. I know you've been teaching a lot, and that's what you've been doing, but you're talking about other projects, so you're still working on stuff, and that is we'd love to hear that. What do you have stuff in the works that's coming up?
Not greenlit yet, but certainly all packaged and ready to go. There's a couple of things. When I went through a divorce after Under the Boardwalk, I think it was early 90s, mid 90s or something. And at the time, I was working a lot with a guy named Gray Frederickson, who produced The Godfathers
Okay.
and
I've heard of
Apocalypse.
those.
He worked a lot with Coppola and others. What's his name? I can't remember the big producer. But Gray was from Oklahoma. And in 1999, he decided he would relocate. He would return to Oklahoma because he didn't want his children to grow up in Beverly Hills. It's pretty conservative man. So when he did, he called and said, the governor approached me because they want to do some things that will build the economics of Oklahoma and change it because of the way it has been suffering from the oil problems. So one of them was to develop the motion picture industry because of the way it produces money for a lot of services. So he talked me into, and then I met with the people here and started this film university program at a college. And then that moved me to another university and then eventually to Pittsburgh and then back here. So for about 20 years or so, 20, I got into academics, teaching film and starting film programs, and taught a lot of the kids that are now making the products here in Oklahoma. But when I decided I'd had enough, I said, okay, I'll invest in myself and write some products. And that's what I've done in the last couple of years, and gathered together producer and casting guys, and we've got actors involved. And a story that I really want to do is a story about an Oklahoma detective who discovered through a traffic stop, a true story, true crime thing, this huge crime network of people stealing trucks in Oklahoma that were shielded by the leadership of the police. So the police were involved with how these things moved. And in the trucks, there were things hidden in the trucks that were sent across the country to be specifically purchased by certain dealers. And then it distributed things bigger. And it got into murder and some other stuff. And it's a cool story with a lot of people still living who went to prison, and I've met a lot of them, and it's neat.
Wow.
And then developed and I acquired the a book about Look magazine. I don't know if you know that. It's kind of like, do you know Led Zeppelin? Because it may precede your age. But Look was like life. And so we've developed a story. The woman, a woman who came to Look magazine, who worked there for 10 years after university, left. She came in as a researcher, and she left as the senior managing editor. And she left with Gloria Steinem, and they started Ms. Magazine in 1971. And she's a hero of the women's movement. She's fantastic. She's 90 something. So this is a Mad Men kind of thing, all about the world that went on in the 60s through this woman and her experiences with this old boys club. So that's a series that we hope the streamers will pick up. And
Wow,
there are other
that's
ones. I got a couple that people asked me to do, and we'll see if it fits. But I've got to go back and make movies because this is really what I know how to do.
that sounds great. I mean, these sound like great stories. It sounds like you're at least a little bit along. Maybe it's something you're going to make pretty soon. We would love that. That would be we're really hoping for it. Love to see another Fritz Kirsch movie. That would
I
be
would
something.
too. I just like to see Fritz Kirsch, son of a bitch,
Is the movie you're talking about, is that The Fruit of the Poisonous Tree? Yeah.
The
Okay.
fruit of the poisonous tree, which is a cool term, which the detective taught me, which I did not know. If evidence is illegal, everything that you got from the evidence is illegal. And so this is really a story about a family member. When the parents are bad, the kids are bad. And that's why they're the fruit of the poisonous tree. So that's what he discovered. Because it was a 15-year-old kid that was stealing the trucks for his uncle who was in prison.
Wow. Great
Well,
title.
we hope you make
Kids
this.
alive.
This sounds like an awesome project. And
Oh, thank you.
Fritz, thank you so much for all your time. This was incredible. We were, you know, there's not many filmmakers that made three movies for New World, and you are one. I mean, I think there's only one other.
Joe Dante. Didn't Joe Dante make?
He only made two, and one he co-directed. So he made Hollywood Boulevard, and then he did do Piranha, but then he
Commander
moved on.
Commander Cody and the Lost Airmen, Hollywood Boulevard. It's fantastic.
Yeah, no, it's like you and Steve Miner.
Steve Miner, yeah, he did quite a bit. He's had a great career.
There's only so many people that even got, especially the second ownership group, that got three picture deals, and you actually fulfilled yours. Most people would get them and then they just didn't happen, and your second one didn't, but your first one did. Thank you so much for this was excellent, and this was just like such a treat, because we're just
such
huge fans huge fans of Tough Turf and Children of the Corn and everything.
I'll leave
else.
You with this and kind of let the thing out. Greg Blackwell wants to have a screening of Under the Boardwalk for all the surf community on the East Coast. That's what he's kind of getting together, so it would kind of resurrect the whole thing, because he's found the surfboard. Steve Channon has it in his ceiling someplace.
The board,
yeah,
awesome. It still exists.
Above.
That's amazing.
One exists.
You didn't take one? Not, it wasn't like the Cornmobile, you didn't get to keep one?
The cheap sons of bitches wouldn't give me anything. I had my hands on wetsuits and, you know, jet skis and everything. I had it all loaded up, you know. It was overflowing.
You didn't get even one of the cars from Tough Turf? You guys didn't have any leftovers for that, from that one?
No, I got a great jacket out of Tough Turf, a which I've worn twice. It's in the closet. It's got my name on it. It is one of those Letterman jackets.
That's sleeve. Cool.
It's got the T on it. It's cool.
Red. Yeah, that's cool.
We all got
that. That's awesome.
Yeah. And that's it. That is our first part of our interview with Fritz Kirsch. We will have another part of this interview where we will discuss more at length Children of the Corn and Tough Turf. You heard a little bit about Tough Turf in this, but you will hear more in the next part of this interview. Thanks again to Fritz.
Thank you.
Just like we get really lucky on this show, and I just feel like this was one that I was really crossing my fingers that we could get Fritz, because he's been such a crucial part of New World's history, and just enjoyed so many of his movies that it was just such a thrill to get a talk with him. So thank you, Fritz. Thank you all for listening. Check out more of our interviews and our episodes at our website, newworldpicturespodcast.com. Support the show, buy a t-shirt, or give us a 5-star review. Tell a friend. We'll see you next time on the New World Pictures Podcast, part of Someone's Favorite Productions Podcast Network. Bye, everybody.